Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the HDFC Life Insurance Q2 FY19 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar, MD and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the discussion on our results for the half-year ended September 30, 2018. Our results, including the investor presentation, press release, and regulatory disclosures, are already available on our website as well as that of the stock exchanges. I have with me Suresh Badami, Executive Director, Srinivasan Parthasarathy, our Appointed Actuary, and Kunal Jain from Investor Relations. I will spend the next few minutes running through the key highlights of our H1 FY19 results and will be happy to take questions post that. Business performance. The last few weeks have been testing times for the economy from a macro perspective, given the weakness in currency, liquidity concerns in the HFC and NBFC space, and crude prices. The weakness is reflected in both the equity and debt markets. Despite these factors, we have maintained our leadership position in terms of total new business received premium, with a market share of 21.2% in the private sector, up from 18.5% in H1 FY18. Our total APE grew by 18%, with individual APE growth of 13% and unrated new business group premium growth of 36%. Renewal premium delivered a healthy growth of 18%. In H1 FY19, we insured over 21.6 million lives. We have industry-leading NBM of 24.3% and robust operating return on EV of 19.6%. As a strategy, our focus remains on profitable growth, both on a channel as well as product basis. Our philosophy is to expand the market by introducing new products that help address varying needs of customers. In terms of product segments, we continue to address the three tenets of protection, namely mortality, morbidity, and longevity. We believe that if market weakness were to sustain for a longer time period, it might adversely impact the velocity of flows into market-linked products. Were this to pan out, we are confident that our time-tested strategy of a balanced product mix should help us weather the storm and ensure that profitable growth remains unaffected. On to our channel performance. We remain focused on deepening our distribution footprint and diversifying our partnership base, with our partner count crossing 200 as on September 30, 2018. I will begin by talking about our third-party distribution channels. While the bancassurance channel continues to grow on a YOY basis, the proportion of bancassurance to total individual business APE has reduced to 67% from 69% due to stronger growth in our proprietary channels, which are agency and direct channels. In the last quarter, we spoke at length about HDFC Bank embracing open architecture and our intention to grow this channel in line with industry growth. We continue to partner with HDFC Bank as well as all our third-party distributors and remain focused on providing the best value proposition to them through continuous product innovation, state-of-the-art technology support, and risk-based approach to customer onboarding. This solid value proposition has enabled us to win bancassurance mandates with leading franchises, including the recent tie-up with Vijaya Bank. Further, we are in the process of signing a definitive agreement with another leading PSU bank. Thus, in line with our stated objective, we continue to work on diversifying our distribution. Moving on to our proprietary channels, we are very proud that they have grown by 32% YOY and have delivered higher-than-company-level margins. A strong proprietary channel gives us higher flexibility to calibrate our sales across product segments and help us maintain a balanced product mix. Our agency channel has grown strong, growth of 26% in H1 FY19. The agent count is in excess of 91,000. The net addition to the number of agents is more than 14,000 in H1 FY19, which is the highest across all life insurers. Our internal initiatives have enabled strong growth and improvement in FLS productivity by over 10%. The direct channel, which includes the online platform, grew by 36% YOY in H1 FY19. Protection products sold by our proprietary channels account for 79% of our individual protection business. Given trends of significant traction through digital modes, we believe that in the next 5 years, these ecosystems will play a central role in most enterprises, and insurance is no exception. At HDFC Life, we are working on a sustainable model to leverage these ecosystems and help set up building blocks for the future. On to product performance. We continue to focus our efforts on maintaining a balanced and profitable product mix. In terms of individual APE, the breakup across ULIP, PAR and non-PAR was 59%, 23% and 18% respectively. Protection remains a strong area of focus, with protection business comprising 28.7% of our total new business premium and 16.2% on total APE basis. Our new product footprints are driven to cater to latent and ever-evolving customer needs whilst ensuring effective risk management. Our foray in the annuity segment has gained traction and is doing well. Another recent launch includes HDFC Life Classic 1, which is a joint life single premium ULIP with a low cost structure. Such a product can compete not only with other insurance ULIP products, but also with other investment avenues. On the Credit Protect front, we remain focused on improving value penetration and attachment ratios across our existing partners and believe that a lot more can be achieved in this space. There has been some speculation on the possible impact of increased competition on our margins as well as loss of partner tie-ups. Our deep distributor engagement ensures that we continue to remain in the partner of choice. Some of our key CP partners have also signed up as our corporate agents, thereby signifying deepening of our relationship. We remain diversified across our partners, with HDFC Group contributing 28% and no single partnership ex-HDFC Group contributing more than 10% of our CP business in H1 FY19. Technology and operations. In keeping with the leadership position we hold on technology, we are working on multiple initiatives aimed at transforming customer experiences, achieving deeper partner integration, and improving sales force productivity. Some of these initiatives include self-service bots and InstaServe, providing real-time fulfillment of requests, creation of an industry-first digital toolbox for our sales force, amongst others. Our efforts are focused on customizing new business and renewal collection process and making pre-approved sum assured available on partner websites and mobile apps. Our persistency has improved across all cohorts as compared to H1 FY18. Our sharpened focus on ensuring suitability of products for the customer has resulted in overall 13-month persistency ratio improving to 87% from 86%. For individual business, our persistency improved to 83% from 82% for the same cohort. In summary, all of the above highlights contributed to the strong performance reported in H1 FY19 as follows. Starting with premiums, our total new business showed robust growth of 43%. Our profit after tax in H1 FY19 was 6.7 billion, clocking growth of 20% with majority of the profits being generated by our core insurance business. VNB growth for H1 was 28%. We continue to maintain industry-leading post-overrun new business margin amongst listed players. Our margin in H1 FY19 was 24.3% versus 22.4% for the same period last year. Embedded value grew from 152 billion rupees to 164 billion rupees. Operating return on EV was 19.6% as against 21.2% for the corresponding period. During H1 FY18, there was a one-time positive operating assumption change of rupees 1.4 billion based on a review by Milliman as part of the IPO process. Excluding this one-time adjustment, operating return on EV would have been 18.7% for H1 FY18. The annualized return on equity was a healthy 26.4%. Our AUM was ₹1,132 billion as on 30th September, reflecting a growth of 14%. A quick update on our group companies. As you're aware, we have two wholly owned subsidiaries that fuel our ambitions in the retirement space and international business. HDFC Pension Management Company retained its position as the number one private owned pension management company in India with an AUM of ₹34 billion as on September 30, 2018. Its market share grew from 21.4% in March 18 to 24% in September 18 amongst all pension fund managers. HDFC International Life and Re continues to scope MENA markets to find unique reinsurance opportunities to build our understanding of the long-term attractiveness of these markets. HDFC International also recorded its second consecutive profitable quarter in Q2 FY19. Closing remarks. As you are aware, there has been a leadership transition this quarter. The seamless changeover can be attributed to the robust succession plan that has been in place and governed by our board. We have delivered a stellar quarter thanks to our experienced, capable and independent senior management team. We are extremely proud of our track record of delivering consistent and predictable results across business cycles and our ability to comfortably weather phases of macro turbulence, regulatory headwinds, or even leadership change. We shall continue to pursue our strategy of harnessing newer pools of profitability while delivering the best value proposition to our partners and customers. The detailed disclosure on our results is available in our investor presentation. In the end, I would like to thank all of you for your constant support of our company. We're happy to take questions now.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question-answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We will take the first question from the line of Prakash Kaparia from Anived PMS. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity and congrats on a good set of numbers.
Thank you, Prakash.
I had two questions. You know, if I look at the private sector AP growth, we've obviously, you know, outperformed them. So if you could give us some sense, what are we doing right? And, you know, I think in your opening remarks, you did mention about, you know, the macro challenges. So if, you know, capital markets see some of these challenges, do we still see outperformance to industry growth? That was my first question.
Yeah.
Secondly, on the ULIP side, you know, the contribution has increase from around 57% last year, and we're already at around 59%. And typically, you know, second half is generally better for, you know, the industry. So what kind of, you know, margins and contribution do we see from here on?
Yeah, so in your first question on where are we on market share, etc., and relative positioning, for us, our growth has always been focused on profitable growth. So market share, while very important, and we, our stated objective has been to be amongst the top three, and we have consistently for quite some time been amongst the overall premium being the number one on market share. What has led to this is a couple of things. One is our balanced strategy as far as distribution is concerned, and all our channels have had a positive growth except our broker channel, which has been a conscious strategy to focus on the quality of the business. So that is point number one, wherein it's and the different channels have different dynamics in terms of both market, both their client base, and so this insulates us to some extent from any ups and downs, whether it's a macro thing or something that is specific to just the distributor. Second point is in our own innovation on the product. So the value proposition or the conversation ability for us to go back to a distributor and say that now we have this product which we believe will expand the market as against just having a single conversation on what can we pay the distributor more. While we have to remain in the zone, but we do bank on a lot of innovation. So, for example, we had launched last quarter, and slightly before that also a couple of products which have started doing very well. One was our deferred annuity product. We have also that I mentioned in my opening remarks on the unit link product, which is a single premium joint life unit link product. So these are product innovations which we believe allow us to go back to our, the customers to have a conversation. Third point is on the forefront of technology, which is doing a lot of things in terms of analytics. How do we give a pre-approved sum assured? How can we empower our sales force to just on their mobile to be able to work with virtually an encyclopedia on every aspect of both the product, what's happening in the economy, all the things that are relevant to make a right sale. So it's multi-pronged. I don't know, Suresh, whether you want to add something?
No, I'm fine. I agree that, look, at the end of the day, the entire growth and market share is focused on creating new segments, looking at new areas of growth, maximizing at a partner level what is the kind of product mix which is most suited to their product and their strategy. And I think we have succeeded in embedding ourselves very well with most of our partners.
Understood. And, you know, the ULIP contribution, if you could comment a bit, obviously, you know, this helps us in, you know, positioning because of the balanced product. But typically, you know, H2 is generally stronger. So what are we seeing? And, you know, typically ULIP is more market link per se. So what trends are we seeing from the customer side?
Yeah, so we follow a product strategy or a segment strategy at a channel level. So, and by that what we mean is for a particular channel, we would sell what the channel can afford to sell. And a ULIP, what you see at an overall company level having gone up slightly, like you mentioned, it is more in terms of certain channels where we, for a particular quarter, we might be, we launched a product as well, and it might be a more tactical opportunity that we want to. So it's not that you will see ULIPs consistently increasing as a percentage overall. We will come back and we will pull the strings back in terms of reining it in so that we continue to have a balanced product mix. So the fact that ULIP went up from 58% to 59%, but if you look at non-PAR, non-PAR has gone up from 13% to 18%. So so the balance is always there, and we want to ensure that we don't lose sight of profitability at an individual channel level. No channel subsidizes the other into perpetuity.
Understood. And last question, if I may just ask. You know, with the Aadhaar verdict out by the Supreme Court, what are we doing with the data, and what has been the experience post the Supreme Court, you know, judgment in terms of KYC, enrollment and process and documentation?
Yeah, so for us, I think for entire financial services, this is a bit of a setback. It is something that a lot of a customer interface could have been eased by the use of Aadhaar, and to be able to give a lot of ease of onboarding, ease of servicing, and from risk management perspective also, and hence eventually give a better, cheaper product to the customer. Now, some of that is history because, like you said, of the Supreme Court order. However, I think a good place for us to end, at least in the short term, would be wherein if there is customer consent, then for us to be able to ping Aadhaar data and to verify it would be a reasonably decent place for us to end. And we are fairly hopeful of that happening, exactly like in what's happening in the banking space.
Understood. I'll come back if I have more questions. Thank you. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, I would like to remind participants, please limit your question to 2 per participant. You may come back in the question queue if you have a follow-up. We will take the next question from the line of Adarsh Prasanpuria from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, ma'am. Thanks for taking my question. Ma'am, question one was regarding what are you seeing on ground in terms of HDFC Bank's involvement with the two other life partners they have. We've seen a pickup on business. They've got some branch access, I believe. So if you can just elaborate on your understanding of the same, please.
Yeah, so we covered this quite extensively in the last quarter, wherein HDFC Bank has opened up in terms of its embracing open architecture. And so it is bound to happen wherein there's some loss of market share on the fringes in certain modes, whether it's in certain lines of business or certain product categories, etc. What is important for us is that we continue working and offering the best value proposition to HDFC Bank, and also how do we also grow and tie up with more and more partnerships. And that's exactly where the 201 partnerships that we ended as of 30th of September come into play. So while there might be a single focus on HDFC Bank per se, and it's a very important partner for us and continues to remain so, but also our ability to especially work on new ecosystems, for example, and we've put out a lot of new flags in there, is the beginning of a great journey and a great partnership wherein through the use of analytics, we can upsell and cross-sell to customers. Start off very small. So for example, signing up at a 100 rupee policy for a 100,000 rupee cover, or a 150 rupee policy for 100,000 rupee cover, those sorts of things which are small amounts, transactional based coverage, and that's just the beginning in India. So we need to expand the market as against that we just have a finite number of distributors and that's all that we can do. Insurance penetration is currently at a fairly low level, much lower than the highs of 4.6% that we used to be previously. So there is a lot of scope for us as life insurers to just grow the pie as against worry too much about who is doing what.
I would also like to add that, look, while at one end we have a new set of partners and we're looking at new areas of growth, even with HDFC Bank, I think the clear objective of the bank is to increase the overall pie. You know, and given that there will be maybe more products, we will come out with newer segments. You know, we have seen some new introduction on the UL side, our deferred annuity product, some unique products on the health side. There is an opportunity because, again, there they can significantly increase their overall business given their customer base. So I would think that, yes, there would be some initial, you know, spike on certain products across various players, but over a period of time will settle and the bank itself will show a much higher growth than the rest of the industry and will come back to our regular growth.
Ma'am, touching base on the same point was what peripheries or products specifically, if you can talk about, are being sold by the bank for other players, if you can highlight that, or is it similar products? Just wanted to understand, the point is this started off? Can this be like a 2-3-4 year process where our share of HDFC Bank's business keeps kind of coming down, or it's just maybe a 1 year process and after which things stabilize? So,
well, we are not going to see it turf very easily, Adarsh, so that is for sure. I think we have to be relevant, and even when we were the sole tie-up with HDFC Bank, I don't think that the tie-up was only on the basis of it being as part of the group company. It was that we give on a day-to-day basis best value proposition in terms of whether it is the products, the customers, technology, and of course commercials. So we are used to that. So it's not like we're waking up now, and we will continue to not take that relationship for granted. As regards what are others selling, I think you'll have to ask them. But what we believe is that there is no product that is significantly better, maybe only on a unidimensional aspect of price point. But if you look at holistically, especially our non-par savings products on the IRR are significantly superior. So that's where it is. I think it's a question of continuing to do and deliver what we do best in terms of all this holistic value proposition that we can offer to HDFC Bank and its customers.
Perfect. And my last question, ma'am, is on the VNB growth, right? We've had a good growth in 1H, but when I try and look at 1Q and then try and get the 2Q number, it's a 16% VNB growth and more like flattish margin, in spite of the fact that our, you know, protection mix continues to do pretty well. You know, obviously we've harped on this point last time as well as to, you know, within the products there, you know, margins may change, but the headline margins are being sustained or improved. What I wanted to understand is, as protection mix probably keeps going up over the next 2-3 years, what would be, you know, the management's view of the overall VNB margin? Because it looks like for now that there is some dent in some segments margin to compensate for the benefit that we could have got from the mix change. So
I didn't understand your last statement. Adarsh, if you could just help me understand that.
No, no. What I was saying is that the protection mix improvement has been pretty drastic. Part of it obviously is come down a VNB margin and some part of it, you know, at least on the face of it, doesn't look to have, you know, at least when you try and take a difference of the saving margin and VNB margin and try and imply on the overall VNB margin, doesn't seem to have translated, which means, which you mentioned even last time, that there may be some moderation in the protection business margin. So I just wanted to understand, take a 2 to 3 year view.
So Adarsh, if you look at our quarter one versus quarter two, our ULIP has gone up. Our protection has also gone up. And that is the reason why the balance has happened in that quarter. It is not that the margins of protection have gone up. By no, it hasn't changed at all. Also, if you look at the walkthrough, I'm not sure whether you've had a chance to do that. In our investor presentation on slide 23, you'll see the walkthrough on an H1 basis of 22.4% to 24.3%, and the uplift of various factors. One is just selling more, second is better product mix or new business profile, and also lower expenses in terms of cost of acquisition.
Understood. I'll leave that here. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Hitesh Gulati from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. Ma'am, my first question is on the annuity business. Just a technical question. What is the new business strain on this business, or is there any new business strain in this business?
I will leave this question to Srinivas, actually. Go ahead.
There's hardly any new business strain in annuities.
Okay. And ma'am, just a couple of more questions. One is, what is the one-off reversal in OpEx that we see on one of the slides on page 25?
Yeah. So the reversal is because 2 years back when we were looking at the merger with Max, we had made some accruals thinking that we are going to have certain spends as a result of the merger. Now, as you know, the merger didn't happen, as a result of which we reversed the provision that we made in H1 of last year. So if we were to back that out, then our expense ratio would be 14.5% instead of 14.2%. And that's the point that we're making. This is on slide 25.
Okay. And ma'am, this component of 110 crore of operating variances slash assumptions is, I'm assuming, mainly variances only, right? Because the assumption change is done at
yes,
the end
that's
of
right,
the
yeah.
Year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, thank you. That's it from my side.
Thanks, Hitesh.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Harsha Toshnibar from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations for good results, ma'am. A couple of questions. One, I wanted your outlook on how the credit life business could span out in the second half, because many of our partnerships are with non-bank financials and mainly with HFCs also. So your guidance on basically how the H2 can look like in this segment. And the second question is in the variance EV walk, you have given the experience variance. It would be helpful if you can break that out into maybe the three basic ones, persistency, mortality, and expense. Thank you.
Yeah, on the CP, as of now, we haven't really revised our own internal guidance. We have been tracking about 20% higher than our own internal guidance or internal targets. Yes, there might be some softening, but I want to make a couple of points, Harshit. As you know, there isn't, so all our eggs are not in one basket. I mentioned that even in our remarks. So overall, HDFC group contribution itself is around 23%, and all other partnerships are very well diversified. And some of them are in HFC, some of them in NBFCs, etc., some of them MFI. And so unless all of them really go down and there is a big impact, over the next 6 months, then there should be a fair amount of balance in the way their respective businesses pan out. Second is our value penetration itself and our attachment rates. It's not like we have maxed out. So even there, if we, even if the there's a slowdown in these sectors, for us to be able to do a higher attachment or a deeper value penetration is certainly there, and we will focus on that. So just to sum up on that, we don't really see. We are careful. We are watchful in terms of early signs, but there is enough that we can do to sustain the kind of growth levels that that we have targeted. Over the next few years, yes, it is possible that the growth moderates out as against the kind of 85-90% CAGR that we've seen over the past 4 years. As we reach a certain level of tie-ups that are possible or are out there to be tied up, as well as the level of penetration that we could possibly get.
Right.
The operating variance breakup, Harshit, it's a good chunk is from mortality positive variance, and the remaining two are from persistency and a little bit in renewals as well.
Yeah, and all three are positive.
All three are positive.
Okay, so we do not have any specific business segment lumpy variances out in the EV.
Nothing. It is across cohorts of policies. It's across segments. Yes, within certain segments, certain products might not pan out in terms of persistency assumptions, but every segment overall is positive.
Okay. And just if I can ask one last question regarding the corporate agency tie-up. So when we look at IRDA, then there is an expiry date which is broadly in 2020 for many of the contracts. So is that simply a nature of the contract of 3 years and we generally do it in form of renewals? Or at the end of the 3 years, we will again, so there is a chance of competition with other players for the corporate agency tie-ups?
So frankly, even the 3 years, and just to play the devil's advocate, you know, 3 years also, if somebody wants to get out of the tie-up, they can do it even before 3 years. So the 3 years is more, as you alluded to, it's more an administrative or contractual part rather than really binding. If we stop giving the best value proposition, even today the relationships can be severed.
Okay, ma'am. Thanks a lot. That was helpful.
Thanks, Ashish.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nitav Toshnaval from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hello, ma'am. How are you? Some couple of questions from my side. Just wanted to understand, there's some tax reversal in the appeal. What is that? And if you can explain on that.
Tax reversal in quarter two.
Right.
Yeah. So a couple of points there. So we do get a dividend tax shield. Overall at a company basis, and it really depends on what is the dividend level that we would have received in quarter two. If we receive more dividends, which we have, then there would be a natural tax hedge for it. Second point is on our participating portfolio itself, there has been a small blip in terms of our segmental profitability, and that also has meant that the tax is lower because there's a tax shield because of the loss that is made. So if you look at the LODR, you'll see that on the participating individual and group life, Q2 versus Q1, that will also explain the reason in the tax. Otherwise, it's business as usual. Sorry, and third point is that we have sold more pension and annuity, and that also has 0% tax.
Right. So how much of the pension annuity is sold in this quarter, and the contribution, if you can just give that disclosure in terms of this product especially?
So if I can request you to take a look at the LODR, the information is in there. If you still want help, then maybe separately I could take it off.
Okay.
The segment of annuity and pension is separately disclosed in the LODR.
Okay. And I can see there is an economic variance of 280 crores. So it's coming from your MPM in bond, I believe, in the fixed income book. So can you throw some light in that?
So yeah, it is from the debt holdings, yes.
So what are the interest rate assumptions you're now actually considering versus previously? Any change? Or I can see your 10-year spotted as 8.22 now and forward 8.73. So you're factoring the current market rates or anything more to read from?
The numbers are all disclosed on MCV basis. So with MCV, you know, you don't have a choice but to use the current yields.
Mm-hmm.
You keep rebasing the yields every month.
Okay, so any further impact we can expect in the next quarter, or we have taken the full mark to market?
Everything is MTM. there is no choice on the methodology.
Right. Okay. And on your 61st month persistency also, just wanted to have some color. It has gone down to 50% from 55%. Anything specific to that?
Yeah. So this, again, you're looking at quarter to quarter?
No, H1 18 to H1 19.
Yeah. So this is what we had again explained in the last quarter, wherein there was a particular cohort that is exiting a system. That cohort of policies had a 13-month persistency of 69%. And so we started off at a disadvantage because that typically the 13-month persistency should be 80% plus. And after that, after the 13-month persistency of 69%, we've been collecting at about 80%. But we started off at a disadvantage, and that's exiting a system. What is quite good in terms of green shoots is that for the month of September, that number was 51%. So this should start trending up as that cohort exits the system.
Okay. So any change of assumption we are considering in the economic assumptions or operating assumptions basically for the persistency?
No, we do this only annually. And typically that exercise is done in March when we do the assumption setting and run it past the board. So unless, of course, there's something very significant that we that's a cause for concern. But otherwise, if it's business as usual, it's an annual exercise.
Okay, got your point. And any color on the kind of margins you're making this annuity business? Because this is quite new and just wanted to factor that in our assumptions. So is it higher than your normal non-par business?
It's higher than unit linked.
And the current non-par business?
Difficult to say because there are various versions. We have a Swiss Army knife type approach for the products that we have, and really depends on, you know, whether it's a return of premium, whether what tenure of payment, etc. So it's difficult to generalize.
Okay. And last, okay, got your point. And last question on your Credit Protect. I just wanted to understand with the slowdown in disbursements, where do you see Credit Protect shaping up and any indicative growth you're seeing for the rest of the year?
So we haven't lowered our growth target for our own internal budgeting purposes. We are cautious. We already have some ammunition in the sense that we have exceeded, as you can see, our half-year numbers by about 20%+. Like I mentioned in the earlier call, I'm not sure whether you heard that. We have by no means maximized in terms of the attachment rates or loan to value rates, etc. So even if there's a slowdown, and given that our business model in Credit Protect fortunately is very well risk diversified, which is across several lines of business, as well as across several partners, with no partner, single partner exceeding more than 10% across CP business other than HDFC Group, means that our exposure to just an HFC industry or an NBFC or an MFI is that much more insulated one from the other. So right now, cautiously optimistic is what you can say our outlook is.
Okay. Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investor Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, ma'am. My question is on the growth in traditional savings product. So
yeah,
there has been quite a strong growth in annuity, but if we remove annuity from non-par savings, the growth in participating and non-par savings, I think, will not be very encouraging. So is there any change which is there at the ground level in terms of consumer perception towards these products, or have we made any changes in the way we are selling policies?
No, participating, yes, has gone down, but our non-par savings is largely on track. It really depends on when you look at a quarter-on-quarter basis, there might be some market pulls and pushes, but otherwise nothing really very significant in terms of between non-par and especially non-par going down. The continued focus is on non-par growth as well.
And secondly, on margins, how do you see the margin trajectory playing out over next 2 to 3 years? Do you think they are still have levers in terms of improving protection share, or we are broadly maxed out on a margin trajectory going forward?
Well, I should hope not sincerely, because if you compare versus where China is today, there isn't even a comparison to begin with. So, as Indians buy more protection, as Indians buy, and by protection I mean all three tenets, and not just in terms of mortality, it's also longevity, it's also morbidity. All of this will be margin accretive, and also through innovation. So, the products and expanding the market to offer products which you know, fulfill the need of customers, something that is worrying them, which is exactly how our deferred annuity product came up. So as long as there's product innovation coupled with growth in protection, I don't see margins having peaked at all.
So 2 years back, for example, you know, when we were around, say, high teens or around 20%, people thought that we almost maxed out there. But then after that, we kind of came up with these deferred annuity products and a few other products, which kind of, you know, boosted our margins. So we don't know what we will come up with in the next 2 years. But the point is that we keep innovating on the product space and come up with identifying pools of profitability and, you know, white spaces where we can penetrate and make the, you know, try to capitalize on the first mover advantage.
You know, and I would add that given the protection gap in the country and the overall market, which is still available for protection, you know, I think there is significant growth which is available in the country.
But from your current product mix, if you look at the product mix, you will also have levers in the sense of expenses and probably better persistency than assumptions. So if you factor in those things, what can be the sustainable margin at the current product mix, not factoring in any change mix?
So when you look at our expenses, you will see a downward movement in our expenses. A lot of these expenses we are not able to straight line because of Indian GAAP. So you will see that, and we've been consistently giving this waterfall chart of our expenses to show how our fixed costs are coming down. And with the use of a lot more technology, including the bots that we have, we should see over in the near term reduction in headcount, or for us, faster TAT, thereby resulting in building the kind of advantage with our distributors. So there are a variety of factors as against just one or two in terms of whether our margins can go up. What we have been doing, and you know, it's really finding every penny, even in, for example, participating product. Often that is viewed as just a product that gives you maybe 10-12% margins. But we would like to believe that we are easily 200 basis points more than what market makes on participating products. So that is possible with tweaking every aspect of a product in a way that one can maximize, or, you know, in terms of your charge extraction, without, of course, not giving the customer a good value proposition, because then really not much would be sold. So it needs to be a balance between what is the value proposition to the customer, to the distributor, and to us. But there's a lot that is often left on the table because of how the product features are structured. That is one aspect, but there are several such aspects wherein, you know, 20 basis points here, 30 basis points here does add to margins, including, for example, what we can eke out from reinsurers. What do we actually reinsure? PMJJBY, for example, has been a very good experience for us. The Pradhan Mantri Bima Yojana, Jeevan Jyoti Bima Yojana. So for us, it has been a great experience. And how much do we retain? How much do we reinsure? So there are several aspects to that in terms of increasing the margin percentage bits and pieces.
Thank you, ma'am. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Madhukar Ladha from HSBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Madhukar.
Hi. I wanted to get a sense of your investment portfolio given the current perception around NBFCs.
So our investment portfolio is, first of all, starting from macro, our debt equity split is in the ratio of 68-32, sorry, 62-38. And within that, we haven't really gone down the credit curve, typically stopping at AA. don't see any big ticket impact of whatever is currently happening in the market. Nothing material.
And can you kind of specify what your NBFC exposure is or housing finance exposure is, if that is disclosable?
It is. You will find this on our website, because especially in the unit link portfolio, we have to put this up on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'm talking more also on the other side, on the books par, non-par part of it, non-linked portfolio.
So not really disclosing it. I mean, again, not that there's anything that's a concern, which is what I'm assuring you. Even some of the names that are currently cause for concern, nothing that's material that's there on our books. So, you know, just to give you a sense, over six, you know, I think 96% of our debt instruments are in AAA rated, and government bonds as well as of September 30th.
All right. All the best.
Thanks for the question.
Thanks.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investment. Please go ahead.
As per IRDA data on April 18, our market share in life insurance was 10.5%, while September 18, it is down to 6.75%. Will you comment on this?
Sorry, can you just repeat the question?
As per IRDA data, in April 18, our market share in life insurance was 10.5%. While it is September 18, it is down to 6.75%. Will you comment on this?
No, we can certainly comment, but I was just curious, why would you see April 18? You would say March 18, right?
March 18 and September 18.
7.1
to 7.3. Yeah, so 7.1 has gone up to 7.3%. So not really sure where you're getting the data.
Okay, we get the data from IRDA side. Anyway, we will again check it.
And yeah, we can reconcile them offline. And that's why I was a little bit puzzled, because our share has actually gone up.
Okay, ma'am. We check it and offline. And growth in renewal business premium is 18%.
Yeah.
New business business premium growth is 43%. What is the specific reason why we are not getting growth in renewal business?
So renewal business has a dependency as to how one grew, especially a couple of years ago, last year and before that. So because the 13-month persistency is the highest percentage, and then it kind of tapers out for generally for the life insurance industry. So if you we had mentioned during the time of demonetization, wherein we had especially for some of our key distributors flat growth, and overall growth was 9% in the year of demonetization. As a result of that, since we didn't grow in that year, renewal was hardly anything, and that has a knock-on effect. That is point one. Second is our focus also on some of these products, whether it's an annuity, whether it's credit protect, etc. These are single premium products, so they're not going to be, you pay them, you receive that premium only once, and so there is going to be no renewal premium. So these are two-pronged reasons as to why overall renewal premium, although healthy, might see a little bit paler than what it might have been for some of the other players.
And ma'am, if you permit me, I ask one more question?
Yeah, certainly.
Ma'am, in this uncertain environment in share market, previously you may have the experience, can we will give more business?
Sorry, I didn't catch your question. We will give more business.
Uncertainty in the equity market, we are getting more business from the investor in insurance, life insurance, or it is not like that?
When you say this is in our shares or as our premium?
Overall market business. So due to uncertainty in the market, many people divert to life insurance also?
Yes, sir, if you're referring to a unit link business which is market linked. Yes, we are continuing to get, because the view is that the stock market volatility, this is a good time to enter.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry.
Down the line, markets are about to look up.
Excuse me, ma'am. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but your voice is breaking up.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
So not really seeing any significant slowdown on Unity.
In some of our products now compare very well with the mutual fund products, so we will see
Unity
products.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that seems to be the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar for her closing comments.
Thank you all for joining us all. As always, we appreciate your support of HDFC Life.
Just allow me a minute. We are still unable to hear you that well. Participants, please stay online while we just try and have the management reconnected. Ma'am, you may please go ahead with Ms. Vibha Padalkar. You may please go ahead with your closing comments.
Thank you everyone for joining the call. As always, really appreciate your support of HDFC Life. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of HDFC Life Insurance, we conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining us. You may disconnect your lines now.